This is a CBC podcast.
Saskatchewan teachers are once again at an impasse with the provincial government. Beginning next week, they will work to rule across the province. And there will be new courses available for high school students soon. They'll be able to study oil and gas in a partnership with industry. Jeremy Cockrell is the education minister.
I think that sector has a long future left in this province. We produce oil and gas more sustainably than any other jurisdiction in the world. That's something that we need to be proud of as Saskatchewan people. That's something that Saskatchewan kids can be proud of and really see a future in that sector. And so, you know, I can see there's going to be years ahead, decades ahead, really, for great career opportunities in oil and gas.
For more on this, we've reached our political panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan, and Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, what's the latest when it comes to the government and teachers?
So teachers were hoping for return to bargaining. Samantha Peacock, the president of the STF, said, hey, we thought that we made some good progress. We finally got down to talking some back and forth in May, and we had some good discussions recently. We want to continue that. We think we're fairly close. Of course, 55% of teachers voting against the recent contract offer that the STF had just said, you know, we should take that. So now I think what's happening in the next little while is we're going to see some sanctions, as the STF has announced that. Jeremy Cockrell saying that the government is now looking at binding arbitration, which is something that they refused a few weeks and months ago. That was something that the NDP and the STF at that time had kind of put forward. He's saying now's the time for that. Now the STF is saying, well, actually, we think we need to be negotiating this deal. As I said, we're fairly close. So there is going to be work to rule the teachers withdrawing voluntary services for the foreseeable future. It's going to affect school divisions and schools in different ways, depending on how their school day works and what they've announced, what they've decided. But we're going to be seeing that play out over the next number of days. And we'll see where it goes from there.
Why don't teachers want binding arbitration anymore?
Binding arbitration isn't a tool. It's a strategy right now. It's been watered down too much in 2016 when the legislation was changed. Both sides have to agree to it. Under the Education Act specifically, which the teachers are under as opposed to the Employment Act, the old Trade Union Act, the person or the group putting forward the binding, the request for binding arbitration sets the list of things that they're going to negotiate. Well, do you think classroom size and composition was on the government's list? Probably was on the teacher's list when they put it forward, but it isn't now. Now, this suggests to me that it's more of a strategy that they're using right now in a prolonged, year-long, protracted strike where now they're running out of strategies and they're hitting deadlines. Teachers are hitting the end-of-the-year deadline, so while we're seeing whether grads are going to be threatened or year-end activities are going to be threatened so that they can make their appeal to government force, pressure the government who's facing an election this fall. That's their deadline and everything else. And they dearly love to get some deal done before the campaign, but obviously they want it done under their own terms, which does not include classroom size and composition. So that's why you're seeing a hell of a lot of things right now that just don't make much sense. They don't make much sense to me in terms of the question you asked, why the teachers supported binding arbitration.
Well, it makes sense if they don't get to set the terms.
Absolutely. This is why now it does make sense, I hope.
Yeah. Okay. Adam, the Premier also announced some new classes for high school students. We just heard the education minister talking about that. What is happening?
The Saskatchewan Distance Learning Center offers a variety of courses for high school students and all sorts of different career paths or offerings. And this week, the government announced at the Weyburn Oil and Gas Show, Oil and Gas 2030 in the next couple of years is going to be offered. It's 50 hours online course, 50 hours in the field working, and it's a partnership with Tyne Energy out of Calgary, which is an oil and gas company, which has given the government $150,000 to kind of kickstart this program to run it. And they're also a donor to the Saskatchewan Party, as some people have pointed out. The Premier and the Education Minister, as we've heard there, have defended this as saying this is something that's kids should have a career path. They should be able to get early exposure to this in school. So far, you know, what we offer in high schools doesn't really have that. So this is getting them in the workforce. Maybe there's a path for them sooner rather than later. And some of the criticism of this is sort of pay for play. Can any company come forward and say, hey, we have $150,000. You know, can we offer a high school class now? When will you partner with us? We asked that to Jeremy Cockrell yesterday in his scrum. He said, well, we'll look at it. It depends on the partnership, but they're not going to turn it down.
Well, could you come with money and teach sex education in schools, or how unusual is this?
Evidently not. I think we've been people are losing their minds over this. There's reason to be concerned, I think, as Adam rightly outlined. I'm troubled by the fact that it's a Calgary company that's a political donor. But there's all kinds of trade training. Now, it all comes down to, in my mind, who actually designs the course curriculum, whether it's professional educators, which Minister Cockrell said would be the case, and how influenced they are by whomever is, as Adam says, paying to play. And I think that that's important. But this is trade training, and oil and gas is going to be with us for a while. It's good to have the kids safe. It's good to have them understand the industry. I see it as not being that much different than, say, carpentry training or other courses, other trade courses that you can get
online or high school.
Automotive. There's a certain logic to this. I think the government is virtual signaling. This is the same government that doesn't want or is criticizing the federal Trudeau government for muzzling oil companies and the things that they're doing. So everything the government does in this area should be viewed with a level of suspicion, particularly when there's political donations and there's certain causes. But the whole notion that somehow kids shouldn't be trained in this particular area is a bridge too far for me.
Adam, the opposition is also still looking for answers on that cabinet minister who brought a gun to the legislature. What's the latest on getting answers about Jeremy Harrison?
So the opposition has sent a letter last week to the speaker to ask him to convene the House Services Committee. And they want the House Services Committee to appoint an independent investigator to look into the harassment and bullying claims and the gun incidents that the speaker had alleged had happened at the legislature, one of which we know did happen, in fact. The issue here is that the House Services Committee is chaired by Randy Weeks, who is the complainant in this scenario. Now, the House Services Committee also contains Jeremy Harrison, who is now no longer the House leader, but he is the person that's been alleged by the speaker to be part of this harassment and bullying. Lori Carr is also on the House Services Committee, and she's the deputy House leader, and her texts were read out in the House by Randy Weeks. So there's some complicating factors here, not to mention, as you know, the committees are a majority government members. Now, Randy Weeks is kind of the tiebreaker on this, ironically, in this committee. So if the committee does get together, they can vote to have an independent investigator, which is what the NDP is pitching. The NDP is also pitching witnesses, and the witnesses are, drumroll, Scott Moe, Jeremy Harrison, Lori Carr, and Reg Downs, who's a senior advisor to the premier, who also has allegations against him.
The speaker
kind of
said
lunging
he might have lunged
at him in the hallway. So this is really complicated still. The premier was asked about this sort of the other day in Weyburn, and he kind of said, which he's been saying for a while, is that if there's a harassment complaint, there are mechanisms within the government that employees can go through, and that as far as he knows, the person that's complaining hasn't made a formal complaint. We've heard from experts in this who have said, well, actually speaking on the record in Hansard is a formal complaint. That's all you need. And there needs to be an investigation in order to make sure that every workplace is getting the same treatment. If there's someone being harassed in this province, especially a government entity, that should be investigated in a certain way. So we're waiting to see what happens here. It'll be something if this committee does convene and to see some, because it'll be a very highly attended and viewed committee, as sometimes they're not.
Yeah, that's true. Murray, you were away last week, but you've written a column this week on Jeremy Harrison. What do you still want to know here?
Oh, a few things. he's not being held into account. I don't know why in a warm day in late April in 2016, he was hunting coyotes. Why? And if you're hunting coyotes, why are you taking your gun to the ledge? That's still not explained to me. Why did you not leave it in your vehicle? All kinds of monitors when you walk in and out of the building, even back then when we didn't have quite the same security. But he could have easily walked to the kiosk, say, I left my truck outside, and can you watch it because there's a gun inside? Or even take that gun inside to the sergeant of arms office, which I counted 11 steps away from the front kiosk that he walked past, and said, look, I could drop off this gun. The nonsense explanations that I was hunting pheasants. I didn't know if it was a shotgun. I didn't know it was a rifle. Well, I'm sure you weren't hunting pheasants because that's not pheasant season. It's duck season, like I mean, Albert Fudd. Let's get serious about some answers here. And maybe the committee is the only way. The problem being is we have a particular individual who chooses not to be held into account for what he says and does. And he is a significant influence in the government right now. And I think we're seeing a whole entire government trying to protect this web of nonsense that he's been spinning because he looks horrible, looks bad in terms of what he did. It wasn't responsible. It's not just a rural thing. Even gun owners. Dick McDicker is basically criticizing the guy. I'm sorry I got the name wrong. But like it's all kinds of people are wondering, what are you doing? Like, I mean, how is this responsible? How does this make us look good? Why are you not following the same rules that we have to follow? And it's a pretty basic one. Like, leave your guns at home when you go to the legislature. I do. Adam does.
Thanks, you guys.
Okay, bye.
Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan. And Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.